by Durow to center. Lundvik shoots. He scores! Johnny Lundvik does it again!
Jarvis in close shot. There's a goal. Seth Jarvis, the 17-year-old, short side, glove side, high, just under the crossbar.
Cutting to the front of the net, and they score. Reese Newkirk along the right wing just took the pass. That was phenomenal patience from Seth Jarvis and the Winter Hawks.
Hey, this is Reese Newkirk, and you're listening to the Pucklandia podcast.
All right, so launching into another edition of Pucklandia, and Brandon Rivers here, and we don't have Chad with us, but we do have WNetwork.ca's beat writer for the Portland Winterhawks, Mr. Josh Kreitzer. So how are things going there, Josh?
It's pouring rain at the moment in Portland, Oregon, but then again, it is December in the Pacific Northwest, so how is it up north there, Brandon?
It seems like we've been getting more rain than you up here in the Seattle area, but not so much today. In fact, I'm outside as we talk, so not great weather, but, we'll take it.
Yeah, a lot of Winterhawks news to get through here today.
Oh boy, yeah, let's pack it in. I know you got some other audio that you talked with the Everett Herald beat writer for the Everett Silvertips, previewing a little bit of the, game coming on Friday, so we already have some content there. Let's just get into the Winterhawks-centric stuff then. And I guess the best way to start is to talk about the last four games. And four games, 8 points. I mean, can't not much to complain about there, especially with the injuries that Winterhawks have been dealing with, eh?
Yeah, for sure. They, Prince George is a sneaky good team. I know there were a lot of fans down here who were kind of locking up the 8 points right away in the bag. And one of the things that I was pointing out was, hey, if you sleep on this team, they're going to sweep you. And that's what happened to, just ask Kamloops. And so, Prince George played well in the games. They took one the second game to overtime, scoring four goals. But, the story of that series was Joel Hofer, and including even a fun Instagram post from the Cougars that were saying how sick they were of Joel Hofer. But, Portland gets two shutouts during that time by a score of 3-0. And like you mentioned, they're battling some injuries right now. And they had guys playing in spots that maybe weren't quite as familiar to them. Maybe none more highlighted than Lane Gillis playing defense there in that fourth game. Sometimes when you see a forward listed on the defensive lines, you just think they're just filling out boxes. But when Gillis hops over the boards, and is playing a regular defensive shift, you're like, okay, Johnson's actually doing this. And he didn't look too out of place. I don't think you want him there long term, while Broenberg's away and Quigley's nicked up. But it's nice to know you have a guy like that who can step in a pinch. So that's my super high-level 45-second take of four games.
Yeah, and talking about Gillis, when we're talking about who of the overagers and talking about each WHL team and which guys are going to make the limit of three, you lose track a little bit of guys that the coaches just love to throw into any situation and know as a guy that's going to give it their best, and that's Gillis. I mean, the points, at least as an 18- and 19-year-old, wouldn't speak to keep him as an overager, but that doesn't, as we've highlighted before, that doesn't talk, the points alone don't give you enough information when you're talking about what a guy like Lane Gillis brings. And that was a case in point when he was playing on the blue line there.
Yeah, and even when there were some injuries up front, Johnson has used him with some of the 16-year-olds. Then he bumps him up to the forward group and to that top line group. And you can just play him in any situation, really. And yeah, he may he's never going to see himself in the top 10 of the WHL in scoring by any means, but he's good. He can fill in for you in a pinch. And I was talking with Seth Jarvis, and he was saying how the guys were giving him chirps and turn your hips and things like that. But it's a lot of fun chirping going back and forth on the bench. But One of the things Jarvis mentioned is that Gillis is their Swiss Army knife. And, you know, they're able to use him, like I said, in really any situation. You know, he's on the power play, he's on the penalty kill, he's playing defense. First line, fourth line, kind of wherever Johnston needs him, he's able to step in. And I think that says a lot. And it shows to a very young forward group about accepting your role and doing what it takes to help the team win. And with such a young group, like we've talked about, with only one 19-year-old forward in Mason Manick, and then, you know, Jake Grecius up front, you know, only having, you know, three guys that are, you know, over 19 is that's a young group. And they're very moldable, and they're all kind of soaking as much in as they can. And what better way to learn than from a guy like Gillis, who's going to show them, you know, what it takes to win and kind of that sacrifice.
Well, since you kind of brought up a little bit of, you know, how much the 17-year-olds are leaned on for offense this year, I think that also speaks to some of the older guys, especially the Wayne Gillis and Mason Manick, who get moved all around the lineup. You know, as 19- and 20-year-old guys in the league, and you're seeing all the prime power play minutes and things like that go into younger players, that, you know, that can't be an easy thing for a lot of players to deal with. And the fact that these guys just – you know, don't care as long as it results in a win for the team. That really, I mean, I just wanted to highlight that point, that's really something that, you know, not a lot of 19 and 20-year-old players out there would take that role, any role that they're given, in giving those, you know, more minutes to those 17-year-olds that are, you know, the guys that are, they're racking up the points. So I just wanted to highlight that.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, those 17-year-olds, I know we wanted to touch on a couple of them with Seth Jarvis and Robbie Fromm-DeLorme, but just real quick, I wanted to, you know, before we moved into those two, is in those four games, five Winterhawks had over 5 points. Jake Grecius, Johnny Ludwig, and Reese Newkirk all had 5 points in the four games, and Seth Jarvis and Robbie Fromm-DeLorme each had six. So, you know, Jarvis had 3 goals, Newkirk had 3 goals during the series. So, you know, they're getting production from that 17-year-old group, like we've talked about, but they're also, you know, the few guys that they are needing to kind of take on some more of that leadership and scoring are also contributing. So, Portland is again getting scoring from up and down their lineup. I think there was only like 4 or 5 skaters who didn't get a point, who played in it, who played in the games, in all four. So, a pretty balanced attack for the Winterhawks.
Yeah, and you mentioned Robbie Fromm-DeLorme and Seth Jarvis both kind of have been nicked up this year. And both, you know, in that four-game set, the leading point getters and Jarvis's speed, I mean, he just – doesn't matter who the defenseman is, defenseman was for Prince George, whether it be a younger guy or an NHL-drafted guy like Cole Moberg. I don't think that's a – blue liners in the WHL are quite prepared for that second gear, I guess, that Jarvis gets into and creates offense there. And that's just a tool that the Winterhawks have. Sending him on the outside, you think you have him pinched off, and you don't. If his hands catch up a little bit more, you're looking at a guy that's really going to pile up points in this league even more so than he's already doing. It's, you know, he's just 17 years old. And a guy like Robbie Fromm-DeLorme, I feel like, especially in our Dub Network group, some of the guys have gotten to see him a little bit more. That's the guy that I think, you know, people who watch a lot of other teams, but maybe not so much Winterhawks, bring up to us the most. Got us totally flown under the radar in Robbie Fromm-DeLorme. How much he's a puck retriever and how much offense he just creates. You know, both guys, Jarvis, you know, the first round pick, way more well known around the league, but Fromm-DeLorme is starting to get noticed.
Yeah, and Fromm-DeLorme is a player who, when he was out of the lineup for that extended stretch with his upper body injury, the Winterhawks had to really struggle with their line combinations and trying to figure out what they're going to do. And he just seems like one of those glue type of guys. And, you know, Portland has all the speed, and Fromm-DeLorme definitely can fit into that box as well. I don't think he's going to win a race with Jarvis by any means, but you know, he's a player that every line is looking for, like you mentioned, in a puck retriever, but he also holds on to the puck really well. And I think his hands have improved massively from a 16-year-old year to a 17-year-old season. You're seeing him being able to kind of stick handle a little bit more and Last year, I kind of called him a bubble hockey winger, where he was really good just kind of going in straight lines up and down the ice. But now he's really showing this. He's using his size a little bit more. You kind of see him kind of get his base a little bit wider to kind of use his body to shield the puck as well. And, you know, he's really driving to the front of the net and isn't afraid to get there, which I think is something you really want to see when you have a player who's come back from injury. And he's not shy by any means going there and going to the dirty areas. That's where he got his goal on Sunday or Saturday, whatever that last game was. They all kind of start to run together.
Say four games of French George that kind of mix in together.
Yeah, they all kind of run together. But in that last game, he went to that spot, and I think that's exactly what the coaches are looking for. You know, as soon as he scored that goal, I watched as he came back to the bench, and Don Hay kind of pointed right to the right to that spot and kind of patted him on the shoulder and was, you know, he being all the way on the other side of the rink. I'm not trying to read lips or anything, but it's kind of the message that you think is being sent there is that's exactly where you got to go and exactly what you got to do. So, you know, Don's been talking a lot about that lately, is getting to that front of the net and getting those second chance points and goals. And Fram DeLorme showed that in that last game.
And the confidence, you know, points will do that. But, I mean, talk about him, how he holds onto the puck a lot more and creates. And, you know, a lot of that stems from confidence and, you know, not buckling under defensive pressure and just kind of using your body to protect the puck. And we're definitely seeing a whole lot more of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's maybe transition now a little bit. I know you've got some information about some of the guys that the Winterhawks are going to be without this weekend. They've got three guys that are going to be away at World Junior camps or are already playing in the case of Broenberg at that lower level. But let's maybe start with Joel Hofer. You know, the team's MVP in the first half of the season, if you want to call it that. I think without a doubt you can say that that's the case with him. And, you know, he's selected as one of four goalies going to Hockey Canada's selection camp and got into a game yesterday. And do you want to talk a little bit about him, Brandon?
Yeah, they played a U Sports team up there that they do that annual series to kind of get the team ready and figure out who they're going to keep. Four goalies in camp, generally keep two, sometimes three, depending. You know, it's in the Czech Republic, so maybe you keep three because it takes that much longer to fly a third goalie over. That's totally up to Hockey Canada and what they decide there. But yesterday, Hofer stopped 13 of 15 against that U Sports team in their 4-3 win, played 32 minutes. You know, he's one of two, I haven't seen these other goalies play much. Playing in the OHL and Q, we don't really watch that too much. But Olivier Rodrigue is probably the, of all of them, he's right up there with Hofer for the most pedigree as far as, you know, draft pick that's signed. He was the Edmonton Oilers second round pick, signed guy, plays for Moncton in the QMJHL. And the other two guys in camp, Hunter Jones, also drafted. He's drafted by Minnesota, and unsigned so far, and plays for Peterborough there in the OHL. And the guy that, you know, is kind of came out of nowhere to get the offer to this camp is Nico Dawes, playing for Guelph. You know, seventh round pick, but seventh round pick for Guelph, undrafted in the NHL. So. Has definitely flown under the radar, but Olivier Rodrigue and Joel Hofer, if you're just going the guys that have the most pedigree as NHL drafted and signed guys, those are the guys looking for time there. I know Dawes played yesterday and stopped all but one. Quality of shots, I didn't see the game, so I can't really speak to that, but yeah, Hofer has a really good opportunity to make the Canadian World Junior team at least as one of those two, if not three goalies. And that kind of leads us into what's going to happen when he's gone. We've kind of talked in the past about how many games he might miss, and that's totally, I mean, can't look too far ahead, but if he makes it, you know, you're looking at the next nine games against the U.S. division. Is that right, Josh?
Yep, next nine against the U.S.
And I guess you could say if Hofer makes the Canadian World Junior team, there at least he's missing at least a big, healthy chunk of that is my – that's my non-number guess there.
And missing at least eight of them.
Oh, yeah. So that's where you lean on a guy like Isaiah DeLora. Only a few appearances so far this year. He's going to be the guy they go to. And, you know, I think, you know, with Hofer being the guy with that's the NHL drafted signed guy. DeLore definitely doesn't have that pedigree, but this is a great opportunity for him to really step into that net and solidify that net minding that Portland has leaned on so much this year. DeLore is going to get that opportunity. Dante Giannuzzi, the Bantam drafted guy. Has Giannuzzi played in any games? I'm kind of drawing a blank on that.
Not this season. He did play, I believe, and he had 4 appearances last year, I believe.
Okay. So, and then, a lot of preseason appearances as well. So, probably lean on DeLore would be my guess, but Giannuzzi there as the backup as well. Another guy that you already mentioned is already playing. He's already played 3 games, and that's Jonas Brøndberg there for Denmark in the Division 1 branch of the World Juniors. So basically they need to take that top seed in order to get back into the main World Juniors next year. And it's not looking great, unfortunately, for Brøndberg, who would be, eligible to come back with the Dane team next year as a 19-year-old. And it would, be a good argument to make that team as well. They started out the tournament in Belarus, there, Minsk, and lost 3-0 to Latvia. Followed up with a 2-1 win in overtime over Slovenia. And then they lost earlier today, as we record this on Thursday here, 4-2 loss to Austria. Latvia's leading, already lost 3-0 to Latvia. They would need to win out in regulation to even tie Latvia. So it's just not looking like the Danish team is going to make the World Juniors next year. Going to be playing in that Division 1 again next year. Would be my guess at this outset, but it's not out of the realm of possibility they get bumped to the lower division as well, depending on what Slovenia does. And so that's kind of unfortunate that you look for the big stage there, World Juniors, for a guy like Jonas Brøndberg, and 3 other WHL guys that you might be familiar with, 2 guys out of Medicine Hat, the goaltender Mads Søgaard, forward Jonathan Brinkman. And, of course, the captain of the Denmark team is a forward from Victoria Royals, Philip Schultz. So 4 WHL guys, looking like they're probably going to be finished somewhere in the mix there in the middle, Division 1, and again play there again next year. So this, and I don't have much information on Simon Knack and how that camp is going, trying to make the Swiss team.
Yeah, I don't know what I only know that the numbers at the time were I think they only had to cut 4 or 5 forwards. So they didn't bring a ton of extra guys, but Knack is what they would call an underager going to this tournament. Basically, it's a 19-year-old tournament, and he is a 17-year-old and a draft eligible. So, he's captained the Swiss national team at lower levels the past 2 years at the Linka Gretzky tournament. So, he's definitely on their radar, and I know how important it is to him to make it. So hoping for his case that he can, but if he doesn't, he's got 2 more kicks at the can at it. So, but he's, he's a strong player, and he's a bigger body, and he's putting up numbers at the WHL level, and he's going to make it really hard for the Swiss coach to be able to send him back. So, I haven't seen any other news yet about cuts or anything, so we'll have to kind of keep an eye on that.
And I guess that might lead us into, missing these guys out of the lineup, Portland, making any decisions into bringing some other guys as affiliate players in?
Yeah, so I reported after the game this weekend that Mike Johnson is calling up Ryder Thompson and Kyle Krzyzewski. Both of those players are signed. They're the 2 15-year-olds that the Winterhawks have signed, Ryder Thompson being a defenseman, Kyle Krzyzewski a forward. Both of those guys are in Portland practicing and not sure yet on their status of playing this weekend in the 3-3. I do know that they were going to kind of take a look and see what was going to happen with Cross Hannes' injury, with Matthew Quigley's injury, kind of those statuses, both those guys are day-to-day. But with those other 3 guys out of the lineup, it's going to make it a little bit of a challenge in a numbers perspective. So it would be nice to maybe see what these guys can do at this level. The Winterhawks have had success when they've brought some of these guys up in the past. And, you know, Ryder Thompson is the lone Winterhawks defenseman still in the pipeline that's not in Portland right now. So an opportunity for the fans to maybe see him. But at this time, there's been no confirmation whether or not they're going to see games this weekend. I did want to circle back real quick to the goaltending situation with Dante Giannuzzi coming up and Isaiah DeLora. The Winterhawks are putting and Mike Johnson chose to not play DeLora during any of those four games against Prince George. And, you know, me and Paul Danzer, who's with the Portland Tribune, we're talking with Mike Johnson after the game about kind of that decision and whether or not, you know, he's going to necessarily, I don't want to say regret not playing DeLora and giving him, you know, one of those games. But, you know, Johnson was adamant about the groove that Hofer's in. But the other side of that coin is that DeLora has not played since November 16th in Seattle. So he's looking at basically one calendar month of not seeing any game action. And Dante Giannuzzi has been in the NJHL. He was traded and has put up a lot better numbers. Now that he's got a better team in front of him, I think he was being asked to stop 40 plus shots a night with his old group. So he's playing really well in the NJHL, but it's another step up to the WHL. So Mike Johnson is putting a lot of, I don't want to say a lot of pressure, but there's guys who haven't seen regular WHL action in a while. And so hopefully fans can have some patience. I know how hard this town is on goaltenders, especially when they've got a guy like Joel Hofer. But I would just caution the fans to exercise some patience with the team and with the guys that they are ready to showcase what they're able to do. Remember that, you know, these are guys who are making a name for themselves, and it's very hard to come in cold and not see that action. So, welcome back, and, you know, here's the Everett Silvertips, and you're going up against Dustin Wolf. So, whether that be DeLora, whether that be Giannuzzi who gets those starts. But I would imagine they're going to probably split 2-1 over this weekend with the 3-3 with Everett, Tri-City, and Seattle on the schedule. So,
and the Saturday game in Tri-City is their Teddy Bear Toss mm-hmm. game. So packed house. None of those three games looks like an easy one for either goalie as far as atmosphere. So going to be interesting to see how they perform.
Yeah, and it's a good opportunity for them to showcase what they're able to do, and it's kind of that next man up. And when I was talking with Josh Horton, it's how do the Winterhawks adjust their style? You know, sometimes when you have a goalie like Hofer in the back, you know you can they may take some extra chances, and that's not to say that that's not a shot against, you know, Giannuzzi or DeLora, but when you've got a guy who's playing, you know, with – you know, top minutes and got some of the top numbers, you might play a little bit differently. So do we see Johnson maybe adjust his style a little bit for, accommodating a goalie who's maybe hasn't seen, you know, the puck in game action as much? Who knows? Johnson loves that run and gun style, and, they do it well. And so we'll just have to kind of see. But these are no slouch games by any means. Seattle, while they are young after trading Matthew Wedman, they bring in a guy like Max Patterson, who's a big, strong forward for them as well. And kind of, he's not maybe at the level that Matthew Wedman is offensively, but Seattle's got, they're really high on their youth, and they're going to sneak up on teams if you take them lightly. And it seems like over the years, no matter when Portland and Seattle play, no matter how good each team is, those games are always competitive. So, Everett is, you know, 1-2 on Friday. Teddy Bear Toss and Tri-City on Saturday. Probably going to see Beck Warm, who seems to always really play well against the Winterhawks. And then right back through the gorge and back home on the Moda before they hit their holiday break.
Yeah, really compact schedule there. And, you know, Everett adding Jake Christensen, which I know you'll probably get into with Horton there. And Tri-City adding Luke Zazula. So a couple offensive defensemen to the mix as well to add some offense there. And I guess, that's all I have for, you know, the current Winterhawks. I did want to talk about, some very recent news right before we started recording this. The San Jose Sharks announced that they had called up Joachim Blichfeld to the NHL. So 9 goals, 10 assists, 19 points for the Barracuda, almost a point per game. So obviously they took notice and And Blickfeld already was an opportunity to possibly make his NHL debut.
Yeah, it'll be good for him. I haven't been able to follow him as much as he's made the jump to the AHL, and it'll be very curious to see kind of how he looks. But yeah, absolutely deserving of it, and good for him to be able to kind of reach those goals. I know he talked a lot about it last year about wanting to be able to play in the pros, and him really taking the time at the end of the year to not go be a black ace, but to really just work with. Work on his game individually, and it looks like it's paid off for him with getting that call up. So I know they've had a head coaching change there as well, and so hopefully he's able to maybe impress some of the new brass that are there. But good for Blickfeld, and it's always good for the Winterhawks organization when you can point to yet another player who has made it to the NHL, and another successful import draft selection for Mike Johnson and that front office.
So with Noah Gregor already having made his debut this year for the Sharks, and I believe he scored a goal as well, or at least one, I think it really speaks to, maybe it's not a terrible thing to send your signed guys back for their overage season in junior hockey. So two guys, already playing in the NHL as 21-year-olds, so that might speak to, maybe a change in how certain things are done in the NHL level. We might see more overagers get sent back, but who knows? Maybe it's just a one-off. I know San Jose not having a ECHL team plays a role into that. But a little bit of an argument for that. I just wanted to slip that in there.
Absolutely. No, I think that's good. Anything else, Brandon, you wanted to touch on here before we move into our audio and our weekend preview with Josh Horton?
Yeah, that's all I got. Really interesting slate this weekend. Very hot Everett Silvertips team. Tri-City Americans team that, has lost quite a bit recently, but it's always dangerous. And I got a chance to see the Seattle Thunderbirds firsthand on Tuesday night against Spokane. They're a team, like you said, that's always going to have an opportunity to win a game. So they don't give up even with their young guys playing a lot of minutes. So, yeah, that's all I got. How about you, Josh? Anything to close us out here?
Not really, I don't think, other than both games are in the Moda Center this weekend. So should be some good crowds. Like you mentioned, nine games against the U.S. division. They've got Everett on Friday, three against Tri-City, three against Seattle, and two against Spokane. So it's moving time in the WHL, and we're fast approaching on that January 10th trade deadline. So, with a lot of the players that have talked about that these games are worth 4 points, and, it's in a very compact at the top U.S. division. These games and which teams can, sneak out push a game to overtime or prevent a game from going to overtime, those one goal games, and are teams able to, kind of make some ground up here. So this is going to be a very interesting time for Portland. The last three games, like I said, before their holiday break, where they're off for a couple weeks. So will definitely be exciting, but hope to be able to see people around the rink here. And stay tuned for our weekend preview with Josh Hort with the Everett Herald. Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you.
All right, welcome in to our weekend preview. I'm Josh Kreitzer, joined by fellow Josh Horton with the Everett Herald. Josh, how's it going tonight, man?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on, Josh. I really appreciate it. Always appreciate what you guys do at Dub Network and this side project you guys got with Pucklandia. So it's a pleasure to be on.
Yeah, it's definitely been a lot of fun. It's second year on the beat for me, and you kind of start to get used to things a little bit, and it's been fun. I got an opportunity to meet you at the preseason tournament, and hopefully we'll see each other again here as these U.S. division games start to pick up a little bit.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, so before we jump right in, how can people read your stuff? Want to get that plug in right away for you?
Sure, yeah, heraldnet.com. There's a nice little convenient Silver Tips tab. Also, I just share all my stuff on Twitter along with game updates. It's at this point of the year, it's a lot of hockey. So at Josh Horton EDH on Twitter, and that's usually the best way to find me.
Yeah, awesome. I know you're a busy man covering a lot of different things, including high school sports as well. So. Yep. You excited to be back at the rink a little bit more?
Yeah, it's been good. It's hard to say. I mean, they right after high school football season ended, they basically went straight on their Alberta road trip. So
sure. Okay.
first time seeing the team in person was today at a practice. So it's been a little while.
Yeah, I bet. I think that might be a good transition for us right into it. Silvertips are red hot right now, 8-2 the last 10 games. Swept that first portion of the Alberta trip as well. And, you know, from what you've been able to see from, you know, from afar, how did the team look on that swing?
Well, I think if you ask, you know, the players and the coaches that were on that swing, they're pretty bullish on the way that, you know, they're clicking as a team right now. You look at that 5-0 win against Medicine Hat, who just came around and just walloped Saskatoon not soon after. To be a team like that, 5-0, in the middle of a 3-3, that's a pretty impressive outing for the Silvertips. I don't know what you're supposed to say more about, you know, something like that. And then, you know, finishing off the 3-3 with a win against Calgary, you know, albeit Calgary's had some struggles this year. That's a really, you know, good character win. And they start the road trip with a big win over Lethbridge. And they took care of business against Swift Current. So they're just playing really good hockey right now. They found some good chemistry with their top six forwards. And, you know, they found a way to win, even though they've kind of battled some injuries as of late. It obviously helps getting Jake Christensen back. He's a guy that a lot of people were kind of wondering if he were to come back, what the Silvertips plan would be. Because he would fetch a pretty decent haul if they decided to kind of dangle him out there on the trade market. But they decided to keep him, and it looks like a pretty shrewd move. He's a guy that can play 25, 30 minutes a night, drive offense. He can form a really nice top pair with Wyatt Wiley if they decide to do that, or he can pair with a guy like Johnny Fairbrother or Ronan Seeley, and then, you know, one of those guys can move up with Wiley. They got a lot of options now. And then after having one of the best defensive cores last year, they obviously lost Savin Kara and Artem Anulin and Ian Walker from that group. But I mean, it this group rivals it. I mean, it's pretty close. So it's a lot of that. And then it's hard to say anything about the Everett Silvertips talking about goaltending. And Dustin Wolf has been nothing short of incredible. I mean, he's got a good defense. It's maybe not as defensively sound this year as it was last year. And he's put up, you know, identical numbers. He's been every bit as good as advertised. So that kind of just lays it all out for what the Silvertips been able to do this year. It's been a lot of, you know, wash, rinse, repeat every year. It seems like people think that this is will take a bit of a step back. And, you know, I myself kind of thought maybe they'd be in that, you know, that third region in the division, but they've reloaded and they've looked really good this year.
Yeah. You mentioned with getting Christensen back, he comes back and he just absolutely tears it up, you know, for the Silvertips there and picks up, you know, player of the week honor and what, 8 points in three games, something like that. Something along
those lines. Five goals, three assists, plus seven rating. Yeah. All work.
Yeah. Hard to ask for it, but you know, with all the positives there's always, you know, something's got to move on the other end. And that's a result of Max Patterson getting moved to Seattle. Second time they've made a big trade with, in terms of overagers in, you know, in these last 2 years. Kind of what are your thoughts around, you know, kind of that decision, you know, to maybe an area that maybe some from the outside kind of looks at Everett's forward depth. What do you kind of see how the team handles, you know, losing a big body like Patterson?
Yeah, it's certainly something that, you know, every decision and everything like that. I mean, there's two sides of the coin. You bring in a guy like Christensen, he's going to help out a lot and be a big, you know, he's a power play one guy. He's going to play, like I said, 30 minutes a night, 25 minutes a night. But losing a guy like Patterson is really tough for this roster that was already really thin at center depth. Really right now, with Michael Gut kind of dealing with some injury issues right now and putting his kind of World Junior Championships status kind of up in the air, they really only have Gage Gonsalves as a true centerman. And even Gage Gonsalves really isn't a true natural center. He moved to that position to form that top line with Kindop and Cole Fonstad, but he is not a guy that was brought up as a center. So he's still learning that position. And the fact that it's kind of bizarre how, you know, these 2 years that I've covered the Silvertips, the same strengths and weaknesses have presented themselves. It's goaltending, defense is a strength, and center depth is just the one weakness. So that is something they have to address. I mean, they will have to go and find someone, whether it's, probably by trade. I mean, I don't really see any other option. So that is something that I fully expect them to do, whether it's a guy that can fit in their top six or kind of fit in the middle six is kind of up to Gary Davidson and what he's willing to part with. But that is something that they certainly need to address. I mean, they won't make a deep playoff run if they don't get some center depth, because we saw last year they lost Riley Sutter for the year. Essentially, he came back in that playoff series at about 70%, it seemed like, and it put a damper on that team, and it really hamstrung them from a continuity standpoint. They just were never able to find a consistent lineup in terms of their forwards, where, you know, they could roll four lines or three lines like Spokane and Vancouver and Portland were able to last year. So that's something that I think their forward depth may be a little bit stronger this year in terms of some of the young guys they've had come in. I mean, Brendan Lee's made a big impact. Jackson Berezowski is a guy that can fit into a middle six role for sure. Martin Fasco, Rudis, Dawson Butt seems like he's taken a jump this year. Michael Goode's been really good. So they have a lot of pieces. They just need to kind of find some pivot men to stabilize it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And, you know, Portland, for all the talk about them, they're rolling right now with 3 16-year-old centers. So, you know, they kind of, you know, they have kind of their own maybe question marks at center. And in talking with Mike Johnson after their weekend, he talked about these young guys need to get better. And then not only did he say that, but it was maybe the most emphatic I've ever heard Johnson. And he said, and fast. And it was, you know, I think that the Everett and Portland are similar. They're very strong in goal. Maybe their, I don't want to say their best player is maybe their netminder. I don't know if that's maybe fair to Kindop and Fonstad up front, but I think Hofer for Portland has definitely been their MVP, and it's not close for them. But you know, I think, you know, as these two teams match up on Friday in a showdown of 1 versus 2, there's going to be a couple of key names missing. I know Portland is going to be without a fair share of guys at, you know, at World Juniors. And from your side, what and the team you cover, what is it kind of looking like? You know, Fasco, Rudis, Michael Goode, and but I believe you reported that Dustin Wolf will be around for the weekend.
Yep, Dustin Wolf is leaving on Sunday morning, so he'll be there for Friday and Saturday's games against Portland and Vancouver. So that's obviously a huge boost for the Silvertips, having him in the lineup for really, you know, two tough games. I know Vancouver is one of those wild card spots, but that's not emblematic of the talent that they have on their roster. So Dustin Wolf will be there. Michael Goode's injured right now, so his status for World Juniors is up in the air. So we'll see if he even travels to the Czech Republic. I was kind of wondering when he was invited to that Czech roster how likely it was for him to stick on the 23-man final roster, because he is a double underager and he's got two more cracks at it for making a World Junior roster. So he might have been more of a long shot. And Martin Fasco Rudis is gone, and I fully expect him to be gone throughout the tournament. It seems like he has a very good chance of making Slovakia's roster. So unless Goot won't play. I know that he won't play. And if he's available to play, he's gone anyway. So sure. he won't be there for that Portland game, but Dustin Wolf will be. So that'll be a big boost for Everett.
Yeah. While Wolf is gone with Team USA, by all accounts, he's going to make that team probably as the backup behind Spencer Knight. But what is the Silvertips confidence with Keegan Karki as a backup? I know he's maybe seen some time here and there, but what do you kind of get from the team in regards to behind Wolf?
No, they're pretty confident in Keegan Karki. Obviously doesn't have the numbers or the pedigree or what Dustin Wolf brings to the table, but he's got some talent. I mean, he's big, fills up the net very well, pretty athletic guy, and you know, he can make some saves. So that's kind of all you want, is just a guy that you feel confident making those saves in net. And it seems like they have something in Karki there. They haven't shied away from using him in back-to-back situations, whereas last year with Max Pelega as the backup, Wolf would have probably started both. I mean, if they have an opportunity to use Keegan Karki and they feel like they can trot him out there, and there's no really hesitance, I guess, from him standpoint. And one thing that is going to be really interesting to follow along with with Wolf being gone at World Juniors, presumably, is that Braden Holt is a kid that they see as the goalie as the future, and he's a 16-year-old that's been on the roster as a healthy scratch mostly, and he's going to get his bite at the apple. So if they think that Braden Holt is a guy that can, you know, play right away as a 16-year-old, that will be interesting in terms of their goaltending mix moving forward. But you know, they're a guy that they are very high on. They really like him. They think he is the heir apparent to Dustin Wolf, and we're going to probably get a look at seeing, you know, what he can do in net.
Yeah. The heir apparent to Wolf. I mean, he's still 18, so he's got at least another year, if not two. So, that's some pretty high praise for Wolf there.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he's going to have to be very patient. Braden Holt is, because, you know, Dustin Wolf isn't going anywhere. So, but they're very high on him, and they see him as the guy that's going to take over the reins when Dustin Wolf moves on. So something to look out for as World Juniors approaches.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So maybe kind of taking another look at the matchup for Friday. And, you know, I don't want to say it's going to be a battle of special teams, because it's a little cliched, and, you know, you and I have talked to enough players to know that we want to try and keep the cliches out of this, but from, you know, I think both teams are really strong on the power play. They're both third and fourth, you know, as of what is today? Wednesday night. You know, not taking into account any of the games that were going on there, but they're both equal at 24.1%. And, you know, it seems like Everett's power play has really been clicking over these past couple weeks.
Yeah, they've been really good on special teams. At the start of the year too, they were dreadful. I mean, they could not score a power play goal to save their lives, and now they're really clicking along. Adding Cole Fonstad to the mix is huge. I mean, he's a guy that can sit on that flank area and fling passes across the Royal Road and create some nice goal scoring opportunities. He's a real special player in terms of his passing ability and vision. So you add a guy like that into the power play, and they'll have a different look than what they've usually been using on their first power play unit. They've had a one defenseman four forward lineup, but Martin Fasco-Runas was that net front guy, so he will be gone at World Juniors. So they'll stick Jay Christensen in his spot, and I'm assuming they'll move Kindop to that net front spot. So it's a different look, but I mean, there's still a lot of skilled guys there, and I think they expect to score plenty of goals on the power play. But it's been really good. I mean, both first and second units have been able to produce goals. We'll see how that second unit fares with some guys out, but nonetheless, I mean, that's something that I'd never really noticed too much the year prior, as they really struggled. If that first power play wasn't clicking, they weren't scoring power play goals at all. But now that they have kind of two units they're pretty confident in, it's a pretty nice boost for them.
Yeah, and you know, obviously adding Christensen in that shot back there is only going to help them even more. And so, you know, and you kind of touched on it before, but you know, if he's going to put up 8 points in three games, you don't necessarily need those forwards, right? But
I mean, Jake Christensen has a skill set that is that, you know, he's an offensive defenseman in a lot of ways. I mean, he's responsible in his D zone, but he's pretty skilled with how he can skate and how he can snap pucks and all that stuff. So he can create offense like a forward. So it's not like they're sticking a defensive defenseman in there. He's a guy that can really do some stuff.
Yeah. You touched already on Kindop and Fonstad, and I know Portland only got to see him, I think, once so far, because I think, I don't know if he was hurt or what, he was out of the lineup, I think, one of the games that they played. But, you know, I guess, you know, maybe as good of a 1-2 combination as there is in the U.S. division, if not the best. Kind of what have you seen from those two guys so far this season?
Well, I mean, Bryce Kindop has taken a 39-goal season and parlayed that into an even better season, it seems like. I mean, he's been really good, and he's taken everything a step up. I mean, he even looks a half a step faster this year, and he's already he's a guy that relies on his speed and his IQ anyway. So the fact that, you know, he can start to blow by guys is pretty impressive. There was a play earlier in the year when they played Spokane where Kindop got the puck along the wall and just beat Ty Smith. That's a guy that you don't really outskate very often. But yeah, Bryce Kindop, he's taken his game to another level. I was curious to see how things would go without Connor Dewar, his line mate for most of last season, gone. how we'd kind of adjust to teams really zeroing in on him. And it hasn't been too much of an issue. There was a little bit of a dry spell for Kindop, but that was with Fonstad in the lineup. So I think that was just, kind of one of those hockey things where goals are coming in bunches sometimes and you can't even buy a goal at some time. So no, he's been terrific. And Cole Fonstad, I mean, you look at a guy like that, he's not a guy that has this, you know, this fantastic snapshot or a guy that's going to walk right in the slot and snipe one by the goalie, but he's a guy that can put up points in a hurry because he's just so his vision is pretty remarkable. And he's very good at doing the right things on the rush. And, you know, just those kind of small things that lead to high point totals. So, you know, those two guys, I mean, what do you say about them? I mean, they're talented players, and Cole Fonstad's a Canadiens prospect for a reason. They're guys with speed and skill. And then I'd be remiss not to mention Gage Gonsalves is a guy that is has really helped that line go. I mean, he's a guy with some pretty tremendous skill. He scored one goal last year and he's got 14 already this year.
The jump.
Yeah, his jump in development has been pretty fun to watch. I mean, he's a listed kid, wasn't drafted. He went to a training camp at 15, went to training camp at 16. They finally decided to sign him, and then he made the team at 17. And he showed some flashes, but it was not consistent whatsoever. And this year, he's a top line center on a first place team. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. So, kind of all that said, you know, with everything you've touched on, what do you look for from Everett on Friday against Portland? I know the first few times they played, Portland's kind of taken them out of their game a little bit, you know, jumping ahead, and they got up, Portland got up 2-0 in both games, but Everett really is has that no quit attitude, and which is kind of what you expect from a division winner and the pedigree that they have in the coaching staff. But you know, there's a lot that's made out of their defensive system, but you know, as a 1-2 showdown, as important as these points can be, you know, I know from the Portland side, they've talked a lot about how they don't see these as 2 points, it's 4 points. And, you know, if you can, you know, this could determine some of these games, or could determine who wins this division, depending upon what kind of run Spokane gets on here. I don't want to take them out, but, you know, these games and these head-to-head matchups, you know, I think there's been one in each barn so far, but you know, these could be what decides who gets that top spot. What do you take from or look for on Friday?
No, without a doubt. And Portland's the one team Everett has not been able to solve whatsoever. And they've only played twice, granted, but it's a team. The way I see Portland, and not having seen some of the newer guys on the roster, is that, you know, they're pretty deep with these, you know, smaller, speedy, skilled guys. And that kind of has always given Everett fits the last couple of years. You know, those teams that can really skate always seem to give the Silver Tips fits, because, you know, they're built from the net out. So if you can kind of neutralize their strength, they seem to have some hard times, you know, with those teams, more so than, you know, the bigger plodding physical teams. They just skate all around them. But it'll be curious to see, you know, how Everett responds, especially, you know, being down, you know, they're down to 10 forwards, and some of the forwards are relying upon, I mean, one's an affiliate player in Carter Hallamandaris, and they're going to probably play Aiden Sutter and Dylan Anderson, two defensemen as their fourth line wingers. So they're going to have to, you know, really grind out a win if they want to come out with it. And I'm sure Dustin Wolf will be relied upon to make plenty of saves. And, yeah, it's hard to say, because, you know, these early season games, especially, you know, this time of year with so many guys, you know, in and out of the lineup, it's tough to say, you know, what the key is, but
sure.
Everett, I think they got to come out fast. I mean, they can't let Portland punch him in the mouth and get up 2-0 and try to claw back. That's a really tough way to beat the Winterhawks. I mean, that's a team that is well coached. You know, those Mike Johnson teams are going to click on all cylinders, and they're going to give it their all, and they're going to, you know, usually execute and do all the stuff that Mike Johnson teams do. So they got to come out fast, and they got to hit on some goals early, or it's tough, because that dam breaks really quick when you play the Winterhawks. That's for sure.
Yeah, especially when they are in the Moda Center, which they will be on Friday. That building usually gets decently loud and pretty packed in there when those games are there. And I know Portland is there. They've got a couple of guys that are going to be gone, and including Joel Hofer. So we'll see if it's Isaiah DeLauro or recent call up Dante Giannuzzi who's going to get the start. But I think that's going to be the biggest question for Portland, and that I anticipate Everett wanting to try and get shots onto an unproven goalie. You know, DeLauro hasn't played in almost a month, in a calendar month, with just the way the schedule's broken out, that, you know, Johnson's been able to play Hofer every game since I think it was like the third weekend in October or in November, sorry, up in Seattle. So, and Dante Giannuzzi's been in the MJHL. So there is, hang on, our recording stopped. Never mind. Here we go. Sorry about that. Had a little issue there. But yeah, so I think that's going to be something that's going to be a challenge for Portland is how do they play in front of a maybe someone that they haven't you know when you have a signed prospect and a guy who's going to be who's at you know Team Canada's selection camp, you kind of play with a different style of trust because you know you've got someone back there to maybe bail you out. So as Portland looks to roll four lines and really try and kind of keep that depth rolling, you know, gone are the days of where they have a top line of Cody Glass and Joachim Blickfeld, or Cody Glass, Skylar McKenzie, and Kiefer Bellows. They don't have that dominant one line. And so as teams, you know, will try and shut down Seth Jarvis and Reese Newkirk, well, then, you know, Jake Grecius is able to step up, or you start to see, you know, Jayden DeRose putting up points, and they got Robbie Fromm to Lauren back. So it seems like if they don't have one line anymore, it's kind of made a challenge for teams who historically when they play Portland are looking to, you know, they'll throw out their top group and say, all right, let's shut this line down and let's force a different group to beat us. It's a little harder to do with this group. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how the matchups shake out on Friday. But it's always a good game when Portland and Everett come together.
Sure. And I thought you brought up two great points. This game might just come down to goaltending for all we know. I mean, you got two of, for my money, they're the top two goaltenders in the Western League. So without having Hofer in the mix, that is obviously advantage Everett. And yeah, that's one thing I've always said about Portland this year is that, you know, last year they had that great top line of Cody Glass and Joachim Blickfeld, and they're pretty tough to stop when they're on the ice. But, you know, if they shut them down, their rest of their lineup didn't seem to be quite as productive. This year it seems like they're, you know, you take away those two guys, but guys like Seth Jarvis and guys like Reese Newkirk and Fromm DeLorme and all these guys that took a pretty big step up. And that's what makes Portland so interesting is that, you know, granted, they lost Glass and Blickfeld, but it seems like they're even maybe a little deeper up front. So that's what makes them so interesting to me.
Yeah. And, you know, they're relying, the majority of their scoring is from 17 and 18 year olds in a league that's often built around how good your 18 and 19s and 20s are. So, you know, that's going to be something to watch. And, you know, them losing Knack and Broenberg, as well as Hofer is going to be a challenge. I know Cross Hannes has been nicked up a little bit with an upper body injury, so we'll see what his status is for this weekend. So that would be a big loss for them as well if they're not able to get him to go. But you know, they're relying on this depth, and you know, on their last game they rolled Lane Gillis out on defense. They were kind of the opposite of Everett, where they don't have enough defensemen right now. So. we'll have to see, because Matthew Quigley is out with an upper body injury as well. So, you know, maybe the teams are kind of a little bit opposite of each other right now. So we'll see how that all shakes out. One other thing I wanted to ask you, just as we're kind of previewing Portland's weekend here, I think you've seen Tri-City and Seattle, Portland's two opponents on the weekend as well, maybe a little more recently than Portland fans have. And it's maybe even been a couple weeks for you as well, but what have you kind of seen from some of those teams in the division?
Well, we'll start with Seattle. They're going to have a much different look without Matthew Wedman in the lineup. Granted, Max Patterson will probably fill his spot as a center in their lineup, but Matthew Wedman, you know, really impactful player with the physicality and the way he can win faceoffs and do all that sort of stuff. So he's going to be sorely missed. Seattle's very, very young. I mean, they are a couple years away from being possibly something special, I think, in their eyes. And some of their young pieces do look pretty good, but man, they're a couple years away. They'll steal a game just because Roddy Ross can really play in the crease. But yeah, they're a couple years away. I mean, they're still kind of figuring out their identity and, you know, what some of these young guys are and how good are they essentially. So they're an interesting team just in terms of their youth movement, but they're still a couple years away. And then Tri-Cities, they're kind of like Victoria and the BC division. They're like mirror images of each other, where every year you're kind of like, man, this might be the year they take a step back. And then they're third in the US division this year. They're like little cockroaches that just won't die. I mean, I don't know what Bob Torrey does to turn the roster around and keep having, you know, pretty competitive teams on the ice, but he seems to do a good job. I mean, Sash Mittal is a fun player to watch. And they got some guys that they picked up off the scrap heap that seem like they're good fits in their organization. And then obviously they have Beck Worm and Net, and who can steal a game as well. He maybe doesn't have the numbers he did last year, but nonetheless, I mean, he's pretty good. And that Boyko kid has definitely taken a step up from his 16-year-old year in Net. So, I mean, both of those teams aren't quite as, you know, talented as the Everett and Spokane's of the world right now, but you know, they can really give you a fight, and they can steal one from you if you're not careful.
Yeah, it seems like Tri-City is a team that really capitalizes on their chances. I've watched a couple of their games, and you know, they'll get outshot, you know, pretty badly, but when if you make a mistake, they punish you for it. So you know, it seems like a lot of times you're seeing 40 plus shots against Tri-City, and but they're finding ways to win these games, and they convert when they need to, and they're patient. And I know Buck Berger's got a great system there and is getting a lot of buy-in from them. And so, you know, Portland fans have seen it. They really struggled with Tri-City. I think maybe in the same way that you kind of touched on a little bit earlier with Everett struggling with Portland last year, Portland, and even a little bit to an extent this year when they've seen each other, is Portland just seems to struggle with that style of play that Tri-City plays. And, you know, Tri-City is able to really kind of lock it down defensively, and they're not afraid to play the body. And so Portland is definitely not overlooking Tri-City. That I can tell you that for sure, with talking with the players, that they take those games very seriously. And you know, as they do, I think with every inner division, but just given the recent struggles that they've had against the Americans, it's been something that is high on their list of things. So,
yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, you can't take a night off in this league. I mean, it's just not something that's feasible. It's especially in the Western Conference. I mean, PG has had their struggles, obviously, and they're probably the one, you know, really weak link. But other than that, I mean, all the nine other teams, I mean, are pretty tough outs. I mean,
yeah. And we saw PG sweep Kamloops the other couple weekends ago too. So it's like, if you take them lightly, you know, Portland just finished four straight against them. And, you know, as drastic as you thought some of these games were going to be, you know, PG took them to overtime one night, and, you know, Portland behind some big saves by Hofer, you know, got two shutouts, but they weren't blowing the doors off them. So I think, to your point, even with how, you know, even if you take PG lightly, they're going to sneak up on you.
Sure. Yeah. And that's the nature of the league. There's no true just rollover team, but there's certainly ones you can kind of pick and choose, you know, when you're going to start your star goalie and when you might give the backup a run. But nonetheless, I mean, the West this year is going to be very interesting. There maybe isn't the arms race at the top like we saw last year with Everett, Portland, Spokane, Vancouver. But I mean, it's still pretty tough. I mean, Kamloops and Kelowna will be tough in the BC division, and Vancouver, you got to think there's something more there. Similar to Spokane last year, where they were kind of a sleeping giant. And then once they got some pieces back, they started to really roll. And Spokane, even this year, I mean, pretty similar. Losing Jake McGrew was a huge loss, but they still got some talent, man. I mean, I wouldn't count them out whatsoever.
Yeah, especially now that they've, you know, it looks like they found a goalie in Parikh back there as well. I think that was maybe one of their biggest weaknesses from what I saw was seeing them last year was their goaltending. And, you know, getting, there was a lot of questions coming back now, unfortunately, with McGrew's injury, but, you know, it was all right, which of their three, you know, do they get one back, two back, or, you know, and they end up getting all three with Smith, Kral, and McGrew. So, you know, it's, I, you know, Portland's seen them enough as well. So, you know, that's the joy of some of these, of the playoff format is you're going to see these teams, and U.S. division is once again, really strong top to bottom. And, you know, I think Seattle maybe isn't quite, you know, they've kind of been selling some pieces off a little bit, which was maybe expected, but, you know, anytime that the, there's those rivalries and those young players get up for those games and the fans are into it in both buildings. So it always seems like no matter how good the two teams are, you know, Portland Everett or Portland Seattle and Everett Seattle always seem to be just really good games.
No, for sure. Yeah. And like I said, Seattle will sneak up on you. Don't take Roddy Ross lightly. I mean, he can really steal a game. So, and that's, this has got to be one of the better goaltending divisions in the Western League with Wolf and Hofer at the top. And then, you know, guys like Roddy Ross and Beck Warm and Parjik and Spokane. I mean, there's some really talented goaltenders. I mean, what, four of them are NHL drafted guys? And then,
yep.
And then Warm into development camps. Yep. It's a talented division for goaltending. So if you're into that, park right in the U.S. division, go rink to rink, and you'll see some good goaltending night after night.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, well, Josh, we've kept you longer than maybe I was intending. So I really appreciate you jumping on. I think that's how every one of these shows goes. But I think if anyone ever says, you know, hey, you know, can we get 10 more minutes out of you? We've only gone 15. I don't think you're very well prepared. So we appreciate having you on again. Remind the Portland fans how they can read your stuff. I know it's been we love seeing what you've got going on up there with the Herald, and you know, I think you guys are doing awesome work up there. So remind fans how they can kind of get the Everett side of things.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Josh. Heraldnet.com is our website, and on Twitter I share all my stories there and insights or what have you on Twitter at Josh Horton EDH. So yeah, give me a follow, and yeah, that's the beauty of a podcast. You can go long and no one is gonna slap your wrists or anything like that. It's just, you know, that's the beauty of it. There's unlimited time.
Speaking of which, do you have you still rolling a Silver Tips podcast up there?
Yeah. I had to kind of go dark on it for a little bit, just with some time restrictions, but I'll have an episode this week with Steve Ewan of the Vancouver province. So awesome. Yeah, look out for that.
Awesome. Cool. Well, we'll maybe put a plug in there for it as well in our link. So we, once again, really appreciate having you on, and we'll see you around the ring here.
Yeah. Tips talk.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
we'll have you on soon on Tips Talk. Cool. See ya.
All right.